Would you be willing to trade all the days from this day to that for one chance, just one chance, to come back here and tell our enemies that they may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom!
Welcome to the Movie Journey Podcast, where we react and review to movies from the IMDb Top 250. And this week, we've got a Best Picture winner.
A Best Picture winner.
We've got a Best Picture winner. Let's just start off with that. I am, of course, Mr. Daniel Henderson. Of course, with me is Mr. Dean Jeffrey. How are you, mate?
Good, mate. How are you?
I'm doing very well. We've got a big movie today. We are talking, of course, about Braveheart.
Aye.
Aye, indeed. This was a patron roulette winner by Mr. Brother Sean. Not Brother Shane, it's Brother Sean this
Brother
time.
Brother Sean. Fine pick.
I think this was a double roulette at that time. I think it was Luke Scarman maybe won it as well. So that was their choice. So well done to them. But quickly before we get to Braveheart.
Give me the update.
So we haven't spoken about Top 250 in about a month.
How's Maverick going?
Maverick dropped 8 spots to 55.
Yeah, it's still so high. Yeah,
doing pretty good. Everything Everywhere All at Once dropped 18 spots. And it's down now down to 175.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so...
That'll get out eventually.
Damn. Yeah, unfortunately. And the only other thing here was Beauty and the Beast has dropped out of the list. And in its spot is The Iron Giant.
Okay, I prefer Beauty and the Beast.
I'd have to watch Beauty and the Beast again, but I really, really like Iron Giant.
It's a fantastic soundtrack.
That's true, but the Iron Giant has a fantastic ending.
The Iron Giant is super overrated.
No, it's not. How dare you? Yeah, that's your update. Very quick. But it's only because we want to get to Braveheart.
Yeah. Right?
We are going to watch this and react to it over on our YouTube channel. If you are interested in checking that out, it may not be up at the same time as this review, but it will be up eventually, which will be at youtube.com/themoviejourney. If you are interested in checking out the full-length reaction, that is over at patreon.com/themoviejourney, where you can also select movies for us to watch, jump in, put a pick into our patron roulettes, like all of our other awesome patrons do. So thank you very much to all of them.
Yes, thanks so much, patrons.
All right, we're going to go check out Braveheart, and we'll be back with our review. All right, Dean, we've just watched Braveheart, and what a sensational time that was watching it with you, my friend.
You enjoyed that, did you?
I definitely enjoyed watching it with you. It's a good setup here for a very spectacular-looking film.
Oh, is it ever?
Yes.
I mean, yeah, you're just rolling shots of Scottish highlands. How could you go wrong?
You couldn't go wrong at all. But let's get into some trivia before we actually get into the deep dive of this, of our thoughts.
Tell me it's not set in America.
Imagine.
Filmed in America.
Braveheart. Stop it. 1995 American epic historical war drama film. Wow. Directed and co-produced by Mel Gibson, who portrays Sir William Wallace, a late 13th century Scottish warrior. The film depicts the life of Wallace leading the Scots in the First War of Scottish Independence against King Edward I of England. The film also stars Sophie Marceau, Patrick McGowan, Catherine McCormick, Brendan Gleeson, and Angus McFadden. So, director Gibson. Any other films of his you can name, director?
Passion of Jesus Christ. I don't know. What's it called?
It's close. The Passion of the Christ.
Yeah, it was pretty close. Yeah.
Have you seen his first film, Man Without a Face?
No.
Okay, he did that before Braveheart. This was his second.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I thought this was his directorial debut.
No. He has also done Apocalypto.
Oh, yeah. I hated that.
I haven't seen it.
I, got 10 minutes in, turned it off.
Oh, wow. That bad.
It's different.
And then he had his big weird spiel and he got, shunned out of Hollywood.
Yeah.
And then he came back with Hacksaw Ridge, which he got nominated for Best Director, which is also in the top 250.
Fantastic movie.
Yes, completely agree. I think about it. I haven't seen it since it came out.
I watched it a few months ago.
Oh, nice.
It's very good.
Cinematography by John Toll. We just spoke about him very recently for his work on Almost Famous, as well as Tropic Thunder. And he has the 2 wins for cinematography for Legend of the Fall, this film, and 1 nomination for The Thin Red Line.
Excellent.
We have music by James Horner. He did have a brief... His name did come up, and then you're like, oh, James Horner. He sounds familiar.
I don't know that one.
Because he's had 2 Academy Award wins for the score and song from Titanic.
I legit thought you were going to say for the score.
The movie The Score.
I was like, wow, really? That is surprising.
This guy also has 8 other nominations. So he got the 2 wins and 8 nominations for An American Tale, Aliens, Field of Dreams, Braveheart, Apollo 13, A Beautiful Mind, and Avatar.
Wow. Yeah. Okay, there you go.
So he's been around a bit. Yeah. Okay, so Terry Gilliam was offered to direct this film.
Oh, God.
Yeah, but he declined.
Good.
Good. Mel Gibson initially turned down the role of William Wallace as he felt he was too old for the part. Gibson was initially interested in directing only and considered Brad Pitt in the role of William Wallace. What do you think of that? In circa 1994. So 7 Brad Pitt.
I mean, Brad Pitt is a very good actor. I'm sure he would do well.
However, Paramount Pictures...
Oh, what do you think?
I mean, he suits the age of what William Wallace was supposed to be like. Could you see Brad Pitt doing a Scottish accent? I mean, he got his pikey accent.
That's the thing. You think about what Mel Gibson was before this. You would have thought it was weird.
Brad Pitt and Troy, so he's sort of... Yeah. Okay, I could have seen it. Paramount Pictures would only finance the film, though, if Gibson played the lead role. So he obviously accepted. So although Mel Gibson was nearly 40, his character was supposed to be in his 20s.
Because he was kicking goals with Lethal Weapon, wasn't he?
Maybe that was passed a little bit. I think they were heading into Lethal Weapon 4 territory by that point.
Maverick,
early 90s.
What else is he in early 90s?
Man Without a Face.
Yeah.
Anyway, Brian Cox, who we did realize was in this film.
Yes.
Plays Argyle Wallace, was offered a larger role first off, but took the role of Argyle because he felt it was a better role.
What role? The father of Brendan Gleeson?
It just said he was first offered a larger role.
What other role is there? Oh, could he be Edward the Longshanks?
Maybe. Why wouldn't it say this in the trivia?
I reckon it'd be the father.
Is that a bigger role?
Oh, he's in the movie a lot more.
Yeah, okay.
He just doesn't do much.
True. Gibson and his production company, Icon Productions, had difficulty raising enough money for the film. Warner Brothers was willing to fund the project on the condition that Gibson signed for another Lethal Weapon sequel, which he refused. Gibson eventually gained enough financing for the film, with Paramount Pictures financing a third of the budget in exchange for North American distribution rights to the film, and 20th Century Fox putting up 2/3 of the budget in exchange for international distribution rights. That's a lot of business discussion right there.
Yeah.
Mel Gibson admitted that the film was heavily fictitious, but claimed the changes had been made for dramatic purposes. An example is when asked by a local why the Battle of Stirling Bridge was filmed in open plain, Gibson answered that the bridge got in the way. And the Scottish answered, that's what the English found too.
Nice.
Mel Gibson later said regarding the film, some people said that in telling the story, we messed up history. It doesn't bother me because what I'm giving you is a cinematic experience. And I think films are there first to entertain, then teach, then inspire. There probably were historical inaccuracies. Quite a few. But maybe there weren't. Who's to say? Because there was very little history about the man. It wasn't necessarily authentic. In some of the stuff I read about him, he wasn't as nice as he was on film. We romanticized it a bit, but that's the language of film. You have to make it cinematically acceptable. Actually, he was a monster. He always smelt of smoke because he was always burning people's villages down. He was like what the Vikings called a berserker, but we kind of shifted the balance a bit because somebody's got to be the good guy and somebody's got to be the bad guy, and every story has its own point of view. That was our bias. Okay.
Yeah, I fully agree.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, make it up. It's a better movie.
Sure. I mean, yeah, come on. Like, it's a movie. It's not going to be perfectly accurate.
The problem is, this movie became so big, and most people's only source of information for this period of time, that everyone just believes it.
But yeah.
Who cares? You did really well.
Well, I don't think you're going to like this piece of trivia, Dean. Aside from a few scenes in the Scottish Highlands, nearly all the movie was filmed in Ireland.
I mean, who cares? Seriously. I could not tell the difference. I wouldn't care if it was America. Like, honestly, it looks beautiful.
It looks fantastic.
Wherever it is.
Going on what I've just said here, in 2009, the film was second on the list of most historically inaccurate movies in the Times. I don't know what the first one was.
Wow, you don't have that?
Probably Star Wars. It was a long, long time ago.
Yeah, okay.
Mel Gibson was investigated by an animal welfare organization who was convinced that the fake horses used were real. Only when one of Gibson's assistants provided some videotape footage of the location shooting were they convinced otherwise. Many Scots were offended by the film's portrayal of Robert the Bruce, who was considered a national hero.
Well, he betrayed the hero of the film.
Yeah, exactly. Several major battle scenes had to be reshot because extras were wearing sunglasses and wristwatches. There's your historical inaccuracies. Yeah. Wallace's real wife was named Marion. However, it is believed that the name was changed to, what is it, Dean?
Mern.
To avoid confusion with the Robin Hood character of the same name.
Maid Marion. Makes sense.
Gibson had to tone down the film's battle scenes to avoid an NC-17 rating from the MPAA. The final version was rated R for brutal medieval warfare. Wow, all right. Gibson and editor Stephen Rosenblum initially had a film at 195 minutes, but Cheryl Langsing, who was the head of Paramount at the time, requested Gibson and Rosenblum to cut the film down to 177. According to Gibson in a 2016 interview, there is a four-hour version of the film, and he would be interested in reassembling it if both Paramount and Fox are interested. What do you think of a four-hour Braveheart? Are you going to watch that?
No. I mean, I'll watch it. It'd be nice to see it in the movies, but it's too long. You don't need 4 hours. Almost Famous has taught us anything. Sometimes you can't have too much of a good thing.
2019, there was a sequel titled Robert the Bruce. The film will lead directly on from Braveheart and follow the widow Moira, portrayed by Anna Hutchison, and her family who save Robert the Bruce, with Angus McFadden reprising the role. And get this, the cast also included Patrick Fugit.
Really? Wow.
Probably his first role since Almost Famous.
Don't be like that.
But there also was a 2018 film called Outlaw King, starring Chris Pine as Robert the Bruce, with Aaron Taylor-Johnson and Florus Pugh. Even though it's not a sequel, it depicts events that occur immediately after them as a Braveheart. And you didn't finish it?
Wow, your memory's insane. Yeah, did not finish it. Wasn't for me.
Honestly,
I'm sure it was fine. I just fell asleep. I actually don't think I didn't like it. I think I liked it and never bothered going back.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's understandable. But this film has a runtime of 178 minutes with a budget of about $65 to $70 million. How do you think this went with a $70 million budget?
450.
Now, you're way over this time. 213 million.
Ah.
Yeah. Good, though. Did good.
Oh, yeah. Very successful.
Yeah, of course, of course. Let's see how many Oscars this won.
A lot, Hendo.
It was nominated for 9 and won 5.
Okay.
The ones it was nominated for was Best Original Score, which it lost to Il Postino, which is translated to The Postman, but it's not The Postman that you think. It's a different movie. It's a foreign film called Il Postino.
Okay.
Yeah. It lost Best Film Editing, which it was also up against 7, but lost to Apollo 13. It lost Best Sound to Apollo 13. And a movie that was nominated for Best Sound at the same time was Batman Forever.
Oh, it's got a great soundtrack.
That's true. Best Costume Design, it lost to Restoration. Okay, never heard of that. It also lost Best Original Screenplay, which it was also nominated with Toy Story, to the eventual winner, The Usual Suspects.
Nice.
Yes, but the ones that it did win...
Christopher McQuarrie.
That is true. It won Best Sound Effects Editing, which Batman Forever was also nominated for. Wow. It won Best Cinematography, which Batman Forever also won, also was nominated for.
What the hell?
I think we spoke about this. We have done Batman Forever before. I think it was nominated for 3 Academy Awards that year.
Insane.
Mel Gibson won Best Director, which he beat out Chris Noonan for Babe, Michael Radford for Il Postino, Mike Figgy for Leaving Las Vegas, and Tim Robbins for Dead Man Walking. Do you think that's correct there?
Yeah, of course.
100%?
Yeah, 100%.
And this film, of course, won Best Picture, which it beat out Apollo 13, Babe, Sense and Sensibility, and Il Postino.
Yeah, yep. Clearly. Clearly.
100% there. But let's look at the scores here. Do you want to have a stab, critics or audience?
Critics.
Critics have it at 76.
Audience.
Saying distractingly violent and historically dodgy.
It's not even that violent, is it?
I don't think it is. Oh, there's definitely some pretty graphic shots.
There's a lot that you don't see.
Anyway, Mel Gibson's Braveheart justifies its epic length by delivering enough sweeping action, drama, and romance to match its ambition. The audience give it an 85.
Oh, nice.
I didn't check out Metacritic, and I'm not going to bother right now. Letterboxd give it a 3.8, but let's take a look at the history of Braveheart in the IMDb Top 250 list. And this did debut on the first list on the 26th of April in 1996, with its highest rank hitting a couple of months later at number 13. That was its peak.
Huge.
It eventually dropped down in about 2009 to its lowest rank at 105. And then earlier on this year, with the IMDb shakeup we had, it just shot straight back up to number 74, where it currently sits with an 8.3 over 1 million votes. So, pretty good.
Pretty damn good.
But I wonder if we think it's pretty damn good. Dean, let's kick it off with
the good, the bad, the excellent.
All right, Dean, what do you like about Braveheart?
I like Mel Gibson.
Oh, do you like Mel Gibson?
I like his funny accent.
You like Mel Gibson?
I do.
I love you. I want to marry you.
I want to marry you. Yeah.
Marry Maroon.
Marry Maroon.
I will quickly butt in here with two very, very, very goods. The locations and the score. The score is fucking unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah. It's great. You really love the score, though. It is a great score.
Another, you know, we'll peel back the curtain here like we always do. We didn't just watch this recently. We watched this a while ago. And I tell you, I have listened to this score on Spotify multiple times since we watched this movie.
I don't understand how you listen to the score.
Oh, it's so good. Yeah. It's so good. I don't know why I put it on and I just get so emotional. Yeah. Like, I just get that numbness.
It's great.
It's so good. The bagpipe, man. Yeah, it's fantastic. And watching Braveheart on the big screen here, it was just fantastic looking. Like you said, the Scottish Highlands, the locale, it was stunning to watch.
Yeah, it was. I like the political element to it as well. I think Edward the Longshanks, seeing him, you know, with his shifty moves is great. Convincing Robert the Bruce to turn on him. All the sort of, politics that go on.
Yeah, the dodgy deals with all the other guys.
The lords and all that stuff and the ones that betray him. I think all that stuff's great. And, again, going back to Mel Gibson, but, seeing him, just so hurt by it, I thought was so good.
The character of William Wallace is fantastic.
What a guy.
Yeah. What a stand-up guy. Turning all these bloody towns down.
He just loves his wife, He just wants to be a farmer.
I want to be a farmer. Yeah. the battle scenes in this are sensational.
Yeah.
Yep. I think it is quite violent in spots. Mm. There was definitely some pretty harsh arrows and faces and stuff like that.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah. You don't really see his wife getting slashed.
Well, that's the thing. You just see her sort of choking.
Yeah.
You don't see him get gutted.
That's true. And you barely see a little bit of blood that
You don't see the head they send.
Yeah.
The body parts. Could have been so much more violent.
Yeah, but I think seeing the graphic violence of William Wallace getting killed and having the head, you need to keep that respect for William Wallace.
Yeah.
Yeah. So not showing it is much better.
I don't disagree.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to be focused on that. You want to be focused on his struggle.
Yeah, exactly.
And of course, the moment of freedom. How good's that?
Which one? The speech or the scream?
The end one. The freedom.
Yeah. That was so fantastic.
Good. Yeah.
There's a lot of technical stuff here that works so well with this film. It's a very long film, but I lapped up every second of it.
It goes really quick.
It does. It really does.
Because the story keeps moving. Because they're literally moving as well from place to place, it does feel like, those 3 hours just fly by.
It does very well with setting up the stakes as well. Obviously, you start off with him as a kid, then he becomes grown up William Wallace, and that whole first portion is him, falling in love with Moran. And then, the big turn when she gets killed and he goes on his revenge mission. And you feel like it's just going to be this revenge mission all the way to Longshanks. But then, like you said, all that political stuff kicks in. And you feel like I've seen this once and it was really long time ago. Maybe twice.
That's crazy.
Yeah, but at 15 years ago, minimum. And I know he gets captured and he gets killed the way he does. So when Robert the Bruce betrays him the first time, I thought that was it. I thought he gets captured at that point.
Oh, okay.
So when he leaves and then it continues on, I'm like, there's more of this, in a good way.
Yeah.
There's more betrayals. There's more.
Not by Robert the Bruce, though.
No, that's and that's
he doesn't know about it.
Exactly. Because in my mind, Robert the Bruce was a decent bloke. And when that happened, I'm like, no, he's not the guy that betrays him. Surely not. So when that reverses itself and he gets his redemption, I loved it.
How could you not?
Doesn't sound like we're talking about a lot of good stuff, but it's these are the key things. I mean, there's other movies we've talked a lot of good stuff. We went on and on and on about it. These things that we've talked about are really a huge combination of the movie. And it's not just goods. I could talk about this as greats. What are your goods and what are your greats? And a lot of this is great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Elite level.
Yeah, 100%. What about bad? You got anything?
No. All the characters are so good. I'm trying to think. I'm like, maybe more
Brian Cox?
No. He was good.
I thought he was going to be here for a little bit longer. He was pretty done quickly.
Mate, if that's your,
I know.
Your bad, yeah.
Yeah, I don't really have too much bad to say about this movie. What about your excellent, Dean? What's your favorite scene?
It is the speech before the first fight as well, because
I'll mirror that. That is the same as me.
And it's not just the great speech, but it is literally the first big fight as well.
Especially when you set up the fact that they've all gone there and they're like, oh, stuff.
Done. I didn't realize they were going. They were turning around. But that speech is so, it's so inspiring.
Yeah, absolutely. So, so good.
Any last words?
Dean, I know this feels like a sort of short review here, but overall final thoughts on this gem of a movie?
Yeah, I love this movie. I've watched it plenty, and it's a movie that's so rewatchable. I don't really think of any other films as well that are like it.
Yeah.
It does stand alone for me, this sweeping Scottish, you know, bloody tale. I have no faults with it, and it gets a...
Amazing.
Incredible.
Outstanding.
From me.
Very good. So, coming into this watch and review, I had this at 5 stars from when I did watch it. And as we've been doing this, there's always these, are these 5-star films staying at 5 stars? Like, I'm trying to find things to not give movies the 5 stars. What separates the 5 stars they're 5 stars? This movie, from beginning to end, just had me enthralled. I cannot think of any glaring fault with this movie. The acting is great. The action is great. The story is great. The locations and the cinematography are phenomenal. The score is elite level. I have not stopped thinking about a lot of this stuff in this movie from the time we watched it to the time we're talking about it now. This is sensational.
Wow.
This movie is so good and without a doubt gets
amazing.
Incredible.
Outstanding.
From me.
Excellent.
I was the best because the crowd loved me.
All right, Dean, where is Braveheart going to sit on your list of now 111 films from the top 250?
This is very tough because I'm looking at like top tier. Let's start Gladiator because I think the films are pretty similar.
Yeah, I'd say they're somewhat similar.
Somewhat similar. Ugh, gee, even this is tough. Yeah, all right, let's forget about Gladiator for a sec. Let's look at the next one, Groundhog Day. Groundhog Day is so good. La La Land, Inception. That's my sort of run there. Then it gets to 7, Dark Knight, Matrix. I think this is better than 7.
Okay.
I don't know if it's better than Inception, though. Yeah, I'm going to put it in between Inception and 7, which is so high. But yeah, at this level, it's tough to rank, which means it will be my new number 14.
14, okay.
What about you?
I'm looking at around the same area. I'm just looking at my tiers here. Let's see. I've got Shawshank, Inception, Dark Knight, Rocky, Saving Private Ryan. I feel like it's going to end up somewhere around there. Just thinking. I think it's better than Saving Private Ryan. Looking at it from the top, I don't think it's as good as a Shawshank Redemption. Oh, what do we got here? Inception, Dark Knight, Rocky, Braveheart is going somewhere in here. Jeez, I'm gonna put it at the top of this tier. I'm gonna put Braveheart as my new number 12.
Wow.
111.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah.
How good's that?
Like, unbelievable film. Stunning.
Ooh. We may still have mail.
Mail, mail, mail.
Here it is.
And
this could be it.
All right. We always let our patrons put in some reviews for the movies that we review. And the only one we got for Braveheart is, of course...
Shame!
All right. We are talking about Braveheart and... What does one think, say, do, and feel after watching such a masterpiece? You know, it's a 3-hour movie that deserves its runtime. It's never boring. Probably the slowest part of the film is maybe the start before Mel Gibson shows up. And how good is he in this? You think he'd have his hands full just directing, but the performance is something in and of itself. Now, it's been probably about 10 years or so since I last watched this, and I'd say what stood out to me the most on this particular viewing is how brutal the movie is, and I probably thought that before as well, but it's still blowing me away. The whole sequence with William's wife in the beginning is just absolutely harrowing. It's just so refreshing to see a movie that doesn't try to be a crowd pleaser, where the good guys don't always win, where life is just cold and dark. The whole movie is just, it's pretty much reminding me of Game of Thrones, you know, without that sappy last episode. Yeah, with this, the wrong people are in charge, you know, I mean in the story. The wrong people are on the throne. They're making absolutely just vicious decisions. And how about, like, Longshanks firing arrows on his own men in battle? That, you know, I'm not even sure Cersei would sink that low. Well, maybe she would. Anyway, I think this is the first war movie I ever saw where the war itself was just unbelievably violent. You know, as it would be. Like, watching this movie as a teenager was pretty much like having my head caved in. God, I can't believe I've written this. It's a brave film. It doesn't pander. It doesn't try to reassure the audience that, you know, everyone's going to be okay in the end. And yet, despite having this, you know, completely sort of bleak view of the world, it's William's courage and that of his people that give the film its authentic goodness that's hard to shake. I think I might have teared up a few times at the end of this movie, but needless to say, it's 5 stars. Absolute banger. Yep, that's all I think I've got today.
Ah, Shane, the 5-star banger. You got to love it.
Love it.
Nice brave pun too.
That was terrible. I like that. He's like, gee, I can't believe I said this.
Nah, very good, Shane. Thank you very much, as usual.
So, what's next?
All right, Dean, next up for us, we have a patron request once again from our awesome patron, Mr. Kevin Iuna, and he has selected the Shining sequel, Dr. Sleep.
Oh, nice. A film I have not seen, Hendo.
I know, which kind of shocks me that you didn't say that. It was very recent. Maybe just slip past you. Who knows?
I guess I just slept on that one.
Maybe you just sleep on that one?
Yeah. I don't know. It didn't really work.
Nah, didn't land either way. But what we're going to be doing with this one is, considering that we haven't done a reaction to The Shining, we're also going to do that at the same time. So we're not going to re-review The Shining. We've already done that previously in our breakdown phase, but we are going to release a reaction to The Shining as well as a reaction to Dr. Sleep with the review of Dr. Sleep coming up. So until then, thank you very much, everyone, for checking out this episode on Braveheart, and we'll see you next time for Dr. Sleep.
Bye.